Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
You're listening to Text Message, the UK-focused technology podcast with me, Nate Langson.
And me, Ian Morris.
And it is brought to you by you. Thank you to our patrons for continuing to support us each week at patreon.com/UKtech. If you're a patron, this is your extended bumper edition of this week's show. And if you're not yet a patron but would like to get our extended cuts, my weekly columns, and other things, head over to patreon.com/UKtech. That's patreon.com/UKtech. And find out how you can support us for as little as £1 an episode. Now, we are back after a little bit of an extended absence, for which I'm extremely sorry. However, it was unavoidable. To be perfectly honest with you, a very, very close relative in my family passed away, and we were going to have a very short break for an unrelated reason, and it ended up being a much longer break for reasons that I'm sure most people listening, I hope, will appreciate. But thank you for bearing with us. Hope you also enjoyed our State of Podcasting episodes. We've got more of those in the bag coming up, but we'll welcome any suggestions for topics or people or institutions or businesses or whoever that you would like us to interview for a future episode. Really hoping to continue those series into the future. And the other very good news to counter the sad news that I've had to deal with recently is that Text Message is up for a Webby Award for Best Technology Podcast. Now, this to me is possibly one of the biggest awards we could ever win, simply because it is so longstanding that it's the Internet Award to win. We're up against some massive names. We're the small fish against the big sharks of the world, the likes of Vice, Leo Laporte, you know, really big, long-standing behemoths in the podcasting industry. And we're, you know, one man and his dog. Not that that's what I see you as, mate. You spend most of your time on two legs. Much hairier than most dogs.
Yeah, that is true.
So it's been a mixed bag of a month, but we are back now, continuing as we intend to go on, and not far away from our 100th episode. So we have got some ideas for that. But if you have any ideas or things you'd like us to do for our 100th episode, whether that's special recording or a live recording or something with lots of people, podcast@nateslangson.com would be a tremendous place to send those thoughts. Now, let's mount our news steed and gallop into the field of this week's tech happenings, Ian.
Yes.
I see you're riding side saddle then.
Apparently so, in this abysmal metaphor that you've constructed for us.
Fiber broadband advertising, that is being investigated by the Advertising Standards Authority? I think it is, isn't it?
Yeah,
Advertising
Agency?
Standards Authority. Authority.
Yes. Fair enough. Okay, you've looked it up.
Yes, I've looked it up. The watchdog is looking into the way that these so-called, quote, fiber broadband services are being marketed, according to a BBC report. Now, in some cases, writes the Beeb, ISPs are advertising services as fiber that rely on slower copper wires for the final connection into the home of the customer. Now, interestingly, this probe was not only prompted by consumer complaints, but also by a call from MP Matt Warman. Now, Ian and I both know Matt, as he happened to be a technology journalist for The Telegraph for some time. So the complaint is in part coming from someone who I think understands at least the fundamental issues of the technology underneath our streets. And the BBC reported that Warman had said ISPs were misleading customers by giving them copper when they expected fibre. Now, it's probably worth here explaining a little bit of the difference between what's called fibre to the cabinet and fibre to the home. Ian, do you want to give us a brief explanation?
There are two systems of getting BT to get fibre to you. They can either run a fibre optic cable right up to your front door, put a little termination box in it, and then some equipment inside your house, which gives you blistering fast speed. I mean, you know, that would be gigabit or more if they were able to sell it. You know, that there is virtually no limit on the speed that you can get through that kind of connection. But what most people have is the Infinity product, which is essentially fibre delivered to a cabinet near you. If you walk around your neighbourhood, you'll see these green boxes. Some of them these days tend to have a BT super fast advert on them. You'll be aware of the design. There's some controversy about that as well, believe it or not. People don't like the fact they're able to freely stick these stickers up and sort of graffiti neighbourhoods with them. But essentially, what happens is that the fibre optic cable from the exchange comes into that cabinet, and then inside that cabinet is what used to be a similar version of what used to be in the exchange. So there used to be this thing called the DS Slam that was in the exchange, and what they've done is they've put fibre all the way to your little cabinet, and then they've got a little mini version of that equipment in there, which then turns the connection between it and your home, which would be like, you know, 100, 200, 300 meters or something like that, into a very fast form of ADSL called VDSL, which can deliver speeds of, you know, 80 plus, I think up to about 300. I think there is a possibility of 300 meg broadband on BT now. So it's a good system. And again, Virgin, it's a similar system. What you will tend to have is there'll be a fiber optic cable that will run from a central Virgin hub in your area. And that cable will run around the neighbourhood to a point. But I understand, and actually the guy quoted in here is from Think Broadband, and I've spoken to those guys a number of times in the past, and they assure me that you could be as much as a mile away from a Virgin fiber optic cable anyway. But Virgin uses a different system to get its broadband to the home. It uses very thick coaxial cable, which means that they can, you know, deliver reliably a lot quicker connection to your house than BT can. And that's just a historic thing, because obviously BT only has this copper pair going to houses, whereas Virgin has put its own cable right up to your front door.
And those coaxial cables can still have speeds of hundreds of megabits per second, and that's why we can still get incredibly fast speeds on Virgin Media. But there is one other category of fibre which is much less common. I think only maybe a couple of percent of households in Britain can get this sort of connection, which is fibre to the home, which is literally where a fibre optic cable through bits of boxes here and there, perhaps, is basically going straight into your house. There are some ISPs like Zen, I think, HyperOptic. I'm not 100% sure if Google Fiber in the US is also fiber to the home, but I strongly suspect
it is. Yeah, I know that Verizon's Fios is. But again, you know, like at some point, that fiber has to be turned into a cable, a normal cable, and it has to be sent. And that's really, I mean, I guess that's sort of the point, is that they're saying that this last bit of that BT connection isn't fiber, but it doesn't really matter.
Well, this is where it comes to the crunch, and we can conclude a little bit on this and invite listeners to send in their opinions, is whether this is a real problem, because this is all a definition. You know, at the end of the day, you could say, well, you get fiber in, you know, who has fiber in that case, basically, because whether it's coming to your house via coaxial cable or coming to your house via copper, you're still getting exceptionally high speeds.
Yeah. And literally no one does. Like, I mean, you raised a couple of companies that would do fiber too. And again, it'll only be in a hyperoptics case. They tend to concentrate on doing blocks of flats. So what you'll have is you will have a fiber optic cable will come into the block of flats, be terminated there, and then each flat will be cabled in a different way. It's probably using Ethernet, to be honest. But even so, it's not fiber all the way. You could get caught up in the semantics of it quite easily, but it's still fiber broadband.
The closest comparison we've ever had was in the sort of late 2000s, where companies were advertising unlimited broadband, and they weren't limited. They had fair usage policies, which Ian and I talked about at great length during CNET and also when I was at Wired. And we got away from that. And then the other thing that would happen is the up to speeds, where people said up to 24 megabits per second, but some people were getting 8. The fact is they lived a long way from the exchange, and because of copper cabling, the distance the connection had to go meant that there was disintegration of signal and therefore slower speeds.
I think honestly that's part of the problem here, is that with BT Infinity there is a chance that you will not get the full 80 meg or the full 40 meg or whatever it is they offer on that low end tariff. So, and that is, I guess, for some people annoying. But again, it depends on how far away you are from your cabinet and the quality of the line between you and it. And you know, there are a lot of factors at play here, including your home wiring and stuff like that. So...
Certainly. Well, the a statement that was given, according to the BBC, from the Advertising Standards Authority said it was acting because of, quote, evolving concerns about the way fibre broadband services were advertised, and that it would consider whether ISPs should be able to continue using, quote, fibre broadband to describe both full and part fibre services. My general view on this is that, and perhaps Ian's, is that this is not actually a major problem right now.
No. Not in a world of, you know, all the other problems that we've got. I couldn't care less about this one.
No. I mean, clarity is generally better when it comes to advertising, and honesty is. I don't think this is a problem. However, I invite people to give me experiences and give Ian reasons to argue as well. Podcast@natelangson.com. If you are a customer of one of these services and are getting much worse service than you think you should, we'd love to hear from you and get some real-world examples about why advertising in this form maybe should be reviewed. Podcast@natelangson.com. Now, a quick one here. Just wanted to note this. Google Home and Amazon's Fire TV Stick with its built-in voice assistant... they're both now available in the UK, launched within a week of each other in Britain, and it's the first time that both of these products have been available outside the US. Now, the products themselves, though, come at two very different prices. The Amazon Fire TV Stick is about £40. It plugs into an HDMI port in the back of any television, well, that has an HDMI port, whereas the Google Home is about £120, something like that. It's a little bit cheaper than the Amazon Echo. And broadly speaking, they are very different products, but the Amazon Fire TV Stick allows you to get the voice assistant service into your house for about £100 less than you would have to spend in order to get an Echo. And if your TV is on in the house frequently, as I understand many people's are, then this might be a compelling alternative to spending £150 on an Amazon Echo. Google Home, on the other hand, offers very similar productivity to the Amazon Echo, but of course it's had something like 6 months less time on the market to develop its equivalent to skills and being baked into local services. But there are a lot of things it can do in terms of reading the news, checking weather, and a few local services as well. And I'm curious, Ian, about your general view on these systems and if you've got any early thoughts on the Amazon and Google products.
Yeah, I mean, I use the Amazon voice assistant. It's really hard to do this. I use it all the time. I have two. I have a Dot, and I have the speaker one, which I keep in the kitchen. My kids love it. It's great fun. It's useful. You could order stuff with it. I really like it. You know, you can build your own Amazon Echo as well with Raspberry Pi.
Oh yes, because
it's open.
Yes, I can't say it, but it woman's name inside or something, isn't it?
Well, the thing about Echo and the woman service, I'm trying not to say it, is that it's all done in the cloud. So it doesn't all you're really doing is interfacing with the thing through a microphone and a speaker. So it's relatively easy to add it to other things. All the clever stuff is done by Amazon, and they have a very good API apparently, which enables you to connect to it nice and easily. So so for about $60 US, you can use a Raspberry Pi and build your own, which would be great fun actually as a project. I mean, it won't obviously have the slick look, and it probably won't be worth it by the time you've sworn at a soldering iron for 35 hours. But you know, it's a good thing if you're handy and you want to sort of build stuff. I mean, it'd be really good fun. I think I might give it a go.
Well, I've got a review unit from Google of the Home, so I'm going to look forward to having the Echo and the Google Home side by side and seeing exactly how it compares. So look forward to that over the next couple of weeks, all being well. We'll maybe do that as an audio feature for obvious reasons. But you'll probably want to listen to that away from your Amazon Echo or your Google Home, because my God, will that be a cluster fiddle. Well, we managed to get through the entirety of that discussion without saying the name of Amazon's product with a woman's voice. So just for good measure, Alexa. Ian, I wanted to just break away from news briefly to have a discussion for 3 or 4 minutes about something that I found in my brain has been a little battle. It's been controversial in my head. This concerns a product Apple released a few months ago called AirPods, little wireless headphones, quite expensive, no cables, plug them in your ears, they connect to all your iOS devices. Now, I've been using these for some time, and I've been bizarrely impressed with them. And I thought now is a good time to do it, just a little mini review, a little explanation about why, and to encourage some of your comments, and also those from anyone who's bought them in the audience. So I did have to think back to how I felt when they were first announced, because I remember being a little beside myself with just shock that such a thing could exist for the price and in the form that they were. And I sort of thought, if I phoned myself up in the past on the day the AirPods were announced and asked myself what I thought of the new product, I'd probably expect to hear something back a little like this.
£160 for a pair of what are basically the earphones you get with an iPhone but without a cord. Same poor sound, I expect, but for the same price as an Apple TV and a sizable iTunes store voucher for content for it. Or the same price as a really good pair of wireless headphones like the AKG Y50BTs or Sony's XB950s. Someone put socks on me because this tickles.
Now, the truth is that they are expensive. These things are £160. Apple says they have great sound quality. The sound quality is great for speech and is passable in a quiet room for casual listening to audio. But I set myself a challenge, and I've used these and only these now for the last month. I'm at this point where when I have to send this review unit back to Apple, I'm probably going to buy a pair.
Oh, no. I mean, I don't disagree with you, because actually I think the idea was very smart from the start, because ultimately it's what people want. People want wireless headphones, and they want all that, the niceness that Apple brings, which is you take them out of the box and they start working. It's smart.
They are incredibly simple to pair. If you're using iCloud across, say, an iPhone, an iPad, and a Mac, like I am, then no matter which device you're on, in the sound menu, you just press AirPods. And the sound just starts coming out of them, you know, within a couple of seconds. No holding down a button to repair, anything like that. You just press them and it happens, which is great for me, because it has meant that sometimes I'm at my desk at work and I want to listen to some music, and I press AirPods and the music comes on. Or I'm going to the bathroom or going for a bath or something else, and on my iPhone, I press AirPods and I'm listening to a podcast or an audiobook, or I'm on lunch and the same, or I'm in a chair with an iPad and it's again AirPods. It works really, really well in a way that Bluetooth is fiddly and annoying.
Yeah, and Siri works over them as well, doesn't it? So you can ask for things to be played to you.
Siri does. However, I don't use Siri for basically anything, so I've not really used that. But it does work as a wireless headset for calling, and I'm reliably informed by my brother Andy, who, as many of you know, is a journalist for CNET and very familiar with all things tech. So the sound quality that he received from me speaking over these things was very good and sounded clear. So that's really reassuring. And the other thing is, I sort of expected these things to fall out when I was running, which admittedly happens about once every 4 months. But recently did have to run very fast for a train to get home for reasons mentioned at the top of the show, and they stayed in. So that was great too. And the other thing is that while the sound quality is not good, I mean, I call myself a bit of an audiophile. I'm an audio snob. I don't mind admitting it. I like hi-fi headphones at my desk. I like good audio processors for my stuff at home, and I still buy CDs as a compromise for good sound quality and convenience. You know, I'm not going to sit and listen to music through these things out of choice in the future. I'm going to still use my Bluetooth ones, but I would still constantly use them for the likes of audiobooks, podcast, radio, even streaming stuff from TV if they just happen to be in my pocket, because they're very unintrusive. The battery life is excellent. The batteries charge very quickly. The little box that it comes in is not just a case, it's also a recharging station. I get probably a couple, if not three times refill. What am I sorry to say here? They'll recharge the AirPods themselves about three times in that box before the box itself needs to be charged. So I've gone like over a week without having to plug anything in, just on general usage for podcasts and stuff. And I think that for me, and for somebody who, you know, consumes so much spoken word content and likes consuming them in places, you know, like in the bath or in the bathroom or doing the dishes or going for a walk, you know, things like that. That, I don't know, there's something that allows me to consume more of that as a result of having these very small, discreet, quick to connect to little devices than putting on big headphones or having everyone have to listen to what I'm listening to out of my phone speaker or computer speaker. So for those reasons, I've been very, very impressed. But the main reason I'm impressed by these is the technology. The wireless technology works so well that it just makes me excited for what the next version is. You know, we have already seen the tech baked into a pair of Beats branded headphones, and I'm sure there'll be a premium version of the AirPod that have maybe sound isolation. Apple used to make these themselves. Doesn't surprise me, or wouldn't surprise me if they do again. Or being baked into, you know, bigger Beats products. And would that make me finally buy a pair of Beats? It's hard to believe because so much better exists for so much less money from the likes of AKG and Sennheiser. But I tell you something, it would get me several steps closer to being convinced. And I think it's all down to the technology. And that's why I think these products are impressive. Woefully overpriced. £160 for what are still technically bog standard Apple earbuds, just with slightly better bass in my experience. I think that's because of the longer stem and the wireless stuff. I mean, it is a hell of a lot of money. £100 would still be expensive, but frankly, £160 is still, I think, a bit of a joke. But nonetheless, if you're the sort of person that can really pull a lot of value out of what they uniquely deliver, and I might be one of those people, then it's money that I could still technically justify. But for everybody else, you know, I think it'll still be a tough sell. But I have been way more impressed by them and by the technology than I thought I'd be at launch. So, you know, that concludes my review. And I'm really keen for anybody to let me know if they've bought a pair and what their experiences have been like, or if you disagree with anything I've said. podcast@natelangson.com. Would love to hear your opinions on Apple's AirPods. Well, a couple of final things we wanted to get to in the news. The first, it's something we've been over before, but the European Parliament has approved the end of mobile roaming charges in the EU starting on June 15th. Ian, are you surprised?
No.
Good. Me neither. Now, VentureBeat wrote the report that I initially read on this. It's a formality, let's be honest. The Parliament voted to approve the thing we all sort of knew it would, about an agreement to end the roaming charges across the EU by the date that we thought it would. Now, this plan was originally announced a couple of years ago. We've discussed it at least twice since then in memory. Most recently, I looked up on episode 85. We went into great detail about this and how it might work, what to expect. So do look up episode 85 if you'd like to hear our detailed discussion on this topic. We briefly discussed it as well in episode 90 for a slightly different reason. But it's safe to say that this is going to happen now. So from June 15th, if you're traveling from the UK to France, to Germany, to Spain, and to, you know, over 20 other places in Europe, then goodbye roaming, no more bills, job done, finished. Post-Brexit, who knows? But it's pretty likely it'll continue, because why wouldn't anybody want it to? However, coming to our final story of the day, if you are in the banking district of London, which I am, although not right now, I'm in Hertfordshire right now, but I work there, then good news, O2 is bringing free 1 gigabit per second, or gigabit, as most people would just say, Wi-Fi to the City of London. That is the City of London, not to say London the city. It's the bit in the east where all the banks and things are and have been for hundreds of years. It's called the Square Mile. They're going to get this Wi-Fi connection from O2, according to a report I read on Engadget this week. Now, we've got lots of free Wi-Fi around London, notably in and around the London Underground stations, but this is the first I know of here to provide gigabit Wi-Fi for free. Now, O2 already has a free Wi-Fi offering. You generally see this in bars and restaurants and hotels and things, and this seems like something of an extension of that, albeit for a specific reason. And Engadget reported that this is a multi-million pound deal that sees a company called Cornerstone Telecommunications Infrastructure Limited, which itself is a joint venture between Vodafone and the parent of O2, Telefonica, to place what are called small cell 4G mobile hotspots all over the areas of the city, on lampposts, on street signs, top of buildings, on top of CCTV arrays and things, to provide this blanket coverage across the city. And the final thing I wanted to point out that I read as well is that the kit they're installing to enable this service will be upgradable to 5G down the line. So, you know, good news in terms of upgradability, and it gives you a signal of where we might see the first blanket 5G coverage coming from in London. Ian, thoughts, my friend?
Yeah, I mean, it's great, isn't it? I think that there's a lot of merit to this kind of thing happening, you know, across the country, in every sort of region. Who doesn't want broadband, ultimately?
It's for free, nice. Very fast.
Yeah, for free, yeah. I think if we're going to... I suppose we're going to have to say it. If we're going to survive Brexit, then we're going to need to have lots of things that, you know, speak about this country that we offer that other people don't. You know, if we're going to go it alone as a market on our own, then we need to be able to sell ourselves as having good facilities. And part of good facilities means, you know, things like free Wi-Fi, good 4G coverage, all that kind of stuff, you know. I just feel like it's one of those things that we're going to have to get very smart about, and that the government needs to be involved with and has sort of neglected. But it's good to see private companies being involved in this as well, and it's going to be good.
Yeah, I mean, we've had a lot of this Wi-Fi in the area for a while. I think the cloud, which I believe Sky owns now, although I might be
it
wrong
does,
about
yes,
that.
Yes, yeah. No, you are right, I believe, yeah.
They've had coverage in a lot of areas, and I think in the square mile in the same area for some time, but obviously this is an awful lot faster than that, and hopefully would spread around the rest of the city, you know, which would be great. Now, here's an interesting fact, Ian. This project will actually replace the one for the cloud that the cloud currently offers, and it's going to be
right.
Fully operational, according to a release I read from the City of London, in the autumn of this year. So this actually, not only is it similar to what's being offered before, it's replacing it.
We can go and play Pokemon Go on it.
Good Lord, Chief. Yes. Well, that's going to do it for this week for us. Let's check in with our good friend, my dear friend, Tom Merritt, over in the US at Daily Tech News Show to find out what's been going on this week in the wider world of tech. Tom.
Hey, thank you, Nate. This week on DTNS, we talked with Veronica Belmont about what chatbots need to do to catch on, discussed with Nicole Lee why Twitter would want to tie itself up with cable TV companies, Rob Reed scared the pants off us regarding AI and bioweapons and taught us just how important sci-fi is to that, we learned why Japan is making Bitcoin more legit, and talked about why it's so hard to leave your mobile ecosystem. All that and a whole lot more at DailyTechNewsShow.com.
Cheers, Tom. Now, Ian, that's it. We're done. Just leaves me to remind people that if you are not currently supporting us on Patreon, but would like to contribute for as little as £1 an episode, then you can do so. And for very little more than that, you can get access to our extended cuts, our columns, our raw as live recordings, which some people do benefit from. That's the stuff where there's no editing. It is literally everything we recorded without anything cut out, including all of our gaffes and tangents, of which there are, well, this week, a lot. Patreon.com/UKTech if you can afford anything to support us over there. And if not, as ever, please keep listening to the free version. That's not going anywhere at all. And the reviews you leave on the iTunes store in your country or any country of choice and telling your friends and colleagues is always appreciated and is still an amazing way to support us and the show. And thank you very much for that. Podcast@natelangson.com and at Text Message Pod on Twitter. Now the exclusive place to access Ian since he's left Twitter for the time being.
Well, I just marked my account as private and just don't check it. So yeah. I haven't really left. It's just... Yeah. Oh, but did you know, if you're verified, and you can delete your account and come back within 12 months and it's all still there. I didn't know that.
Well, that's good to know.
But if you leave it, if you put it as protected first and then delete it, it goes immediately. Don't do that.
Okay. Well, you can follow us on @TextMessagePod. We post there throughout the week of all the stories that we may discuss at the weekend, but also some that we consider talking about and don't, such as this week, mobile ad spending in Ireland jumping 63%, or graffiti was, quote, dying out because kids are using Instagram and Twitter more for expressing their creative vision, or another game show, a video game show coming to one of the UK's TV channels. These are all stories we tweet about and talk about on Twitter, but sometimes don't make the final cut of the show. But follow us there @TextMessagePod to get those. Thank you to everyone for sticking with us while I had my personal downtime, and we'll look forward to seeing you all again next week.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.